You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It is Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk our state's history with our partners at the Michigan History Center. On this eve of the fifth anniversary of the Flint water disaster, one might ask, just how do you record and preserve details from such a catastrophic event like this for perpetuity? Well, who better to ask than our partner at the Michigan History Center, State Archivist Mark Harvey, who literally does this for his job. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
Mark, as an archivist, how do you approach such a massive event as the Flint water disaster when you think about recording and preserving things from this event for people to study for generations beyond?
We have lots of processes to deal with actual weather emergencies. So if there was a tornado or a flood and there were records or artifacts damaged, we have all those emergency response procedures in place. But we don't necessarily have a process for when an event like the Flint water crisis happens. So initially, for myself, I was reading the paper and got sort of caught up in the story of it. And it's like when I talked to my son at baseball practice, like, don't watch the game, be part of the game. So after a while, we kick into archivist or curator mode and start thinking about the importance of documenting what's going on, right before our eyes. Events are still occurring. The need is to document it. So when we think about history, it's really a present occupation. So that's how we looked at Flint water, not right at the onset of it, but within the first 6 to 12 months, we quickly realized we had to document this from a number of fronts.
So what has the Michigan History Center been able to document or preserve so far?
The History Center's documented a lot of artifacts that cover things like water distribution points, artifacts like water bottle kits, ephemera, and t-shirts, all these different components of the state's response to that crisis, whether it's from Department of Environmental Quality or Department of Health and Human Services. We also went to Dr. Mona herself and asked for some artifacts to represent her groundbreaking work in the crisis. There's one of her lab coats and a stethoscope, and a very moving component is a chandelier made by kids in the pediatric unit at the Hurley Medical Center. So it's a multicolored chandelier made out of old plastic water bottles.
As you're sitting and kind of realizing we need to grab things, we need to preserve things, how do you decide what is worth preserving and archiving?
The thing that we look at the most is what is the public going to want or need or should have access to in the future. I phrase it, maybe someone else has phrased this before I have, but I call it the democracy of information. So we see our role as the gatekeepers of information the public needs or wants or should have. So that's one lens we look at it through. And then the other is that interpretive lens. So our other role is to preserve those stories that have occurred in Michigan so that we can reinterpret them at some later date to be determined so that people don't forget, especially with an event like the Flint water crisis.
Oral history certainly became a very, very key part of preserving the history of Detroit's 1967 rebellion. In fact, they even trained, squadrons of volunteers to take these oral histories. Is that something that has been done or you're considering doing, collecting oral histories about the Flint water disaster?
Both. So the Flint Public Library worked with NPR's program StoryCorps, and they did a project in 2015 and then renewed it in 2016 and did a lot of oral histories through that project. There's other local groups that have done other recording projects around the Flint water crisis. We'd like to. It's sort of that delicate balance of, okay, many people thought the state helped exacerbate or created this problem, so we're a state institution. There's a real trust factor going into a local community and saying, hey, let us record this story that many feel like the state helped or create on its own. And I think that goes with any collecting that we do. And it's something they never train you for in any grad school courses, that human element of trust in communication. So first I have to convince you that your history is important enough to save, which is for a lot of people, even though it is a big hurdle. And then I have to get you to trust me with your story. That's an even bigger hurdle. And when you're coming from a state agency, I think most people would probably trend towards not trusting. So that's one. I think we've done a good job at that. But that's something that I always keep in front of mind, is that I need to earn someone's trust to preserve and share their story, and then we take it from there.
I suspect that's what could keep an archivist like you up at night, kind of thinking about how to make this all work.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that with the Flint water crisis, one of the early stories that came out was that they didn't have accurate assessor records to even determine who had lead service pipes to their house, and some of them were penciled written. I actually reached out immediately, because we don't just collect stories. We can help people preserve their information. So we reached out to the local agency to see if we could help. And I think it was too much at the time for us to try to come in and help them sort those records out, which they did on their own. But that was one of those things that, oh, I wish we could have helped them. Because that, again, is that trust building part of this project, where if we could build trust, then we could help them preserve that record. But also just individuals, there must be thousands of people that have a story about this crisis and how they were affected. No amount of oral histories are going to cover all those stories.
So when you think of the pieces and artifacts that you've collected so far, what's the one that really stands out most to you?
A couple things. A lot of the documents, the archival stuff, is still under litigation hold. So we don't have access to a lot of those records that traditionally an archivist would go after. We do, early on, I did reach out and contact Mark Edwards and their staff at Virginia Tech, but what they've done is really a good job of publishing everything that they've done, both working papers and final reports. So we've essentially just crawled their website and copied materials off. But those are important because that's a university from another state. There's no guarantee that flintwaterstudy.org is going to be there indefinitely.
That website that they created.
Right. I mean, I think we make assumptions that that's just going to be there. So we took it upon ourselves to crawl that site with their permission. That's really important. And then from the artifact side, the Michigan History Museum, which is part of the center, actually through a curator on staff who lives in Flint, you know, is part of the community, and knew former Mayor Dane Walling, who was able to collect a section of his lead service line and his refrigerator water filter as part of the collection. So we actually have a piece of one of the pipes.
So if you were to fast forward, let's say, a century into the future, what do you hope Michiganders a century from now would glean from the preservation efforts that the Michigan History Center is doing?
I hope they'd be able to see the whole picture, whether that's from the researchers at Virginia Tech or the red flags thrown up by the medical community led by Dr. Mona, or the efforts or the lack thereof of different agencies that had a part in this crisis, you know, from state on down to local to private companies. So we're trying to give as wide a focus as possible. We're not trying to predetermine what people think, just give them all the ingredients to look at what happened and make their own judgment.
Any plans to do with something with what you've collected, perhaps an exhibition?
Yeah, whenever we collect, interpretation is always part of that. And so when it comes to archival material, our intention is to preserve it and make it available to the public. In this case, again, because the litigation holds and because flintwaterstudy.org is already online, we'll do it in some way. I'm not 100% sure how. But then on the museum side, I'm sure at some point we have these incredible artifacts that we can interpret and tell the story, and we will do that at some point.
Mark Harvey, State Archivist with the Michigan History Center, thank you so much for sharing your inside knowledge on how you go about archiving such a major event as the Flint water crisis. Thanks so much.